not widely shared by financial and economic experts. However, on Sunday, he was cautious overall after boasting throughout his election campaign of the swift gains his policies would bring for the US economy and ordinary American financiers. Global stock markets have continued to fall amid fears that a wide-ranging trade war could dent US economic growth and result in a recession, even as the White House has denied that Donald Trump's trade policies are causing lasting chaos.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
The Gaza Strip is facing a severe humanitarian crisis as Israeli blockade, now exceeding a month, continues to prevent the entry of essential aid, including food, fuel, and medical supplies.
The Gaza Strip is going through the most dire circumstances ever. The famine is back again, even more severely, as 25 bakeries stop completely. This current crisis is unprecedented, as this is the longest time span of closure of the Gaza crossings by the Israeli regime. This in turn has caused the shortage of flour and fuel needed for the bakeries to operate.
The United Nations World Food Programme reported that all bakeries in Gaza have ceased operations due to the acute shortages of flour and fuel. The WFP emphasized that bread, often the only accessible food for many families, is becoming unattainable, warning that famine is a serious risk looming for the Gazan population.
All the bakeries closed today because of the continuing closure of crossings. All what was stored in our warehouses by the WFP have been consumed completely. So here we are now, without any ingredients there is no way we can work. We used to consume 250 to 300 tons of flour daily, which was less than the actual amount needed for the population. Now there is no choice for us.
The dire humanitarian crisis is further exacerbated by the continuous Israeli military aggression that not only claims the lives of thousands, but also makes survival for 2.2 million Gazans a struggle.
As the blockade endures, the people of Gaza continue to face an increasingly desperate struggle for survival, with starvation looming as a significant threat besides the continuous Israeli aggressive attacks. Ghad Ibrahim, Gaza City.
Over 3 weeks of daily U.S. airstrikes across Yemen have failed to achieve their declared goals of ending the Yemeni blockade against Israeli shipments in the Red Sea. When the Trump administration first launched its military operations, they confidently claimed the strikes would just last a few days. But upon entering the war with Yemen, Trump discovered what many had learned before him. Starting a war in Yemen is easy. Escaping its endless trap is where the real fight begins.
These U.S. airstrikes against innocent Yemenis and against Yemen came with the goal to protect and secure Israel and to stop Yemen from its support for Palestine. They have failed to achieve this main task. The biggest proof for this is that Yemen continues to attack Israel and has even expanded its operations targeting Ben Gurion Airport and forcing it to close, along with attacking more Israeli sites.
And that's because Yemen is constantly developing and manufacturing more advanced weapons at a record speed. According to military experts in Yemen, this accelerated development is baffling American military planners and reshaping battlefield calculations.
Today, Yemen's armed forces have acquired superior military means across the board, weapons that can hit with more precision and hit at greater distances against U.S. targets. This is changing the balance of power in this war in favor of the Yemeni people and the axis of resistance.
As Washington scrambles for answers, Yemen isn't just withstanding the assault, it's rewriting the rules of the battle.
According to Yemen's defense minister, the armed forces have made significant progress in developing new weapons, which could soon be used to target additional U.S. positions on both land and sea. Yusuf Mawri, Sana'a.
Controversial remarks by the Israeli envoy have sparked outrage among the Palestinian solidarity community in Austria. Addressing members of the Jewish community on March 20, Ambassador David Roed is heard saying there should be a death sentence for 16-year-old teenagers in Gaza, and if Europe invests in rebuilding Gaza, Israel will have to destroy it the next time. Palestine solidarity activists launched a petition to the Austrian government calling for the expulsion of the diplomat.
In the video, he called for the death penalty for minors in Gaza and emphasized that Israel will continue to destroy Gaza. So he not only defended Israel's genocidal strategy, but even endorsed it. This is unacceptable for an international representative, and therefore he must be recalled.
The remarks have been heavily condemned by Jewish anti-Zionist activists in Austria who have recently launched the Vienna Jewish Anti-Zionist Declaration to strengthen Jewish pro-Palestinian voices in Europe. They criticize the close relationship between the Austrian Prime Minister Christian Stocker and the Israeli ambassador.
There is obviously a very close contact between Stocker and the Israeli embassy in a time where there is a genocide in Gaza, which is unacceptable for us, as Jewish anti-Zionist initiatives, we condemn this strongly, and we will continue to pressure our government to stop all ties with Israel.
Some lawyers and solicitors prepared legal steps in response to the comments made by Roed and those in attendance.
From a legal perspective, it's difficult to do anything because the ambassador is immune. The immunity would have to be lifted to prosecute him, and the government won't do that. The real scandal, however, is that the remarks aren't even being investigated by police.
While there is strong condemnation in the international media, Austrian journalists have been silent about the video.
Activists are outraged over the continued alliance between the genocidal regime in Israel and the Austrian government. In a balanced act of disrespect to the Palestinian community, no Palestinian representatives were invited to the annual iftar hosted in the city hall by the mayor of Vienna last Thursday. While no Palestinian representatives were invited, Israeli representatives attended the event and were seated in the first row. Dieter Reinisch, Vienna.
Over 3 weeks of daily U.S. airstrikes across Yemen have failed to achieve their declared goals of ending the Yemeni blockade against Israeli shipments in the Red Sea. When the Trump administration first launched its military operations, they confidently claimed the strikes would just last a few days. But upon entering the war with Yemen, Trump discovered what many had learned before him. Starting a war in Yemen is easy. Escaping its endless trap is where the real fight begins.
These U.S. airstrikes against innocent Yemenis and against Yemen came with the goal to protect and secure Israel and to stop Yemen from its support for Palestine. They have failed to achieve this main task. The biggest proof for this is that Yemen continues to attack Israel and has even expanded its operations targeting Ben Gurion Airport and forcing it to close along with attacking more Israeli sites.
And that's because Yemen is constantly developing and manufacturing more advanced weapons at a record speed. According to military experts in Yemen, this accelerated development is baffling American military planners and reshaping battlefield calculations.
Today, Yemen's armed forces have acquired superior military means across the board, weapons that can hit with more precision and hit at greater distances against U.S. targets. This is changing the balance of power in this war in favor of the Yemeni people and the axis of resistance.
As Washington scrambles for answers, Yemen isn't just withstanding the assault, it's rewriting the rules of the battle.
According to Yemen's defense minister, the armed forces have made significant progress in developing new weapons, which could soon be used to target additional U.S. positions on both land and sea. Yusuf Mawri, Sana'a.
A very bleak and somber day in Gaza marking the start of Eid al-Fitr. The scenes here in the central part of the Gaza Strip are not the same and the usual ones. Empty streets, closed shops, and grieving families everywhere. And all that reverberated through is just the echoes of the strikes and artillery shells all around the Strip. Nonetheless, people wore new clothes and adorned their despair-filled streets, holding mere demonstrations of delight and steadfastness, and hoping that their suffering will know a very permanent end.
I hope the war will end, and we will spend the Eid as all other people. I wish to go to swings and play, not to be trapped and suffer like this. I was happy here with this initiative. We had some entertaining activities that brought us happiness. I'll also go to my aunt's home like others.
Despite the endlessly lingering consequences of Israeli genocide in Gaza and the unbearable trauma people have been subjected to during the last 17 months, the Eid comes at a time of grief and unending trauma. The children here in Deir al-Balah, who are internally displaced from their homes, have finally found out a glimmer of peace and joy to vent their pain, and their hope and resilience have never changed. Abu Bakr Abid, Deir al-Balah, Central Gaza, Occupied Palestine.
The Constitutional Declaration was expected to lay the foundation for a democratic transition that represents all Syrians. Instead, it centralized power in the hands of Jolani, granting him absolute control over government appointments, including ministers, third of the parliament, and a committee that will appoint the rest, while restricting any oversight on his authority.
The declaration contradicts the aspirations of Syrians for democracy, political pluralism, and peaceful power transition. Instead of allowing the people to elect their leaders, it strips them of that right. Even the parliament can neither grant confidence to the government nor hold it accountable.
Critics argue that the declaration lacks true democratic foundations, concentrating authority in a single leader rather than ensuring fair representation for all components of Syrian society. The disappointment appeared in the small number of people celebrating the anniversary of the Syrian revolution, which did not exceed a few hundred.
Unfortunately, the Constitutional Declaration leans away from democracy, placing excessive power in the hands of the president and excluding genuine participation. Worse, it addresses transitional justice selectively, shifting all blame to one side instead of ensuring accountability for all parties.
Beyond legal concerns, recent events on the Syrian coast have raised serious fears about the country's future. Armed factions linked to the new regime have been accused of grave human rights violations, including mass killings, acts that some experts warn may amount to crimes of genocide.
What happened in the Syrian coastal region raises serious concerns about the future and the potential for further oppression. While I hope for a solution that satisfies all Syrians, the current situation leaves many in fear of what's to come.
As Syrians grapple with a deepening crisis, the Constitutional Declaration has only added to political discontent and growing fears about the country's future. With power concentrated at the top and violence escalating, hopes for democracy seem more distant than ever. Ali Mohammed, Damascus.
So
In his annual meeting with government officials and foreign ambassadors on the occasion of Eid al-Fitr, Iran's leader has called this religious celebration a shared practice that can help unite Muslim nations and as a result offer them protection against the enemy's aggression, such as the ongoing genocide in Gaza. An example of using people's support in a geographically strategic location to unite with the oppressed is Yemen, a nation that has successfully imposed maritime restrictions on the Israeli regime for its genocidal war on Gaza.
The Yemeni nation today has stood up against this aggression as we believe that the true power is with God Almighty. The Yemeni nation's trust is with God and the people's movement. With the honorable people standing by us in the resistance front, God willing, we will defeat the enemy.
In Iran, support for the Palestinian cause came with the 1979 Islamic Revolution.
From the early days of the victory of the Islamic Revolution, supporting Palestine has been one of the ideals of Iran to which the nation, the officials, and leader have remained loyal.
Since the parliament represents the people and they demand support for Palestine, we have taken legal action against the slaughter of Palestinians and the destruction of their land, among other steps.
Our stance is completely clear on the unwavering support for the resistance, which is a fundamental policy based on the ideals of the Islamic Revolution, as Iran's leader reiterated today. While resistance groups act independently, Iran will continue to support them.
Of course, standing up against world powers in solidarity with the oppressed comes at a price, which could be lessened if more Muslim nations joined in. And Eid al-Fitr is a great reminder of that responsibility. For millions of Muslims across the world, Eid al-Fitr presents a fresh start and an opportunity to unite to restore peace and security and Muslim dignity. Maryam Azarchar, Tehran.
Amid relentless Israeli bombardment, hundreds of thousands of Palestinians in Gaza performed Eid al-Fitr prayers over the rubble of destroyed mosques in displacement shelters and besides the ruins of their homes. The destruction of homes and places of worship has left many Palestinians with nowhere to gather for Eid prayers, further deepening the sense of loss during this sacred time.
This Eid comes at a very depressing time and amid circumstances of death, starvation, and bombing. But the people in Gaza insist on celebrating Eid despite everything, even if it only means performing the Eid prayer.
Reviving the spirit of Eid is an attempt by the people of Gaza to momentarily escape the Israeli resumption of the genocide and the graver humanitarian crisis caused by the ongoing blockade. However, the Israeli occupation insists on staining this day in particular with bloodshed and massacres.
I only came to the Eid prayer to fulfill a religious duty. However, there is no joy or happiness for us. As you can see, the mosque is destroyed, but despite that, they cannot erase our faith from our hearts, and we must pray.
In the 24 hours leading up to the Eid, the Israeli massacre intensified, leaving at least 50 Palestinians killed, the majority of whom were young children playing close to the tents while dressed in minimally available Eid clothing.
This third Eid since the beginning of the genocide concludes with the sounds of the takbirs being mingled with the explosions of the artillery shells falling on the tents and the homes of the people, killing the children and burying their laughter under the rubble of their homes, and making this trip even a wider slaughterhouse. Ghad Ibrahim, Gaza City.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of the speech delivered by Imam Khamenei,
the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with a number of distinguished reciters of the Holy Quran in a gathering titled Communion with the Holy Quran. This meeting took place in the Imam Khomeini Husseiniya on the first day of the blessed month of Ramadan, March 2nd, 2025. The recitation of these verses leads to purification. What does purification mean? It means a healing of the soul and heart. That is the meaning of purification. The human heart, spirit, and soul are healed of those ailments I mentioned earlier. This is what purification means. The Quran does this. The recitation of the Quran purifies. I may not be able to properly describe for you the immense joy and happiness I feel when I see different reciters coming together to read the Quran, both with proper tajweed and with correct pauses and starts, along with a beautiful, accurate articulation of the letters. This is truly remarkable. It's very good. The more widespread this becomes, such gatherings, the better. In any case, tartil, in the sense that I have mentioned, is a prerequisite for our recitations to be effective. The third point is that the reciter's goal in their recitation should primarily be to benefit themselves. When you recite the Quran, your primary intention should be to benefit yourself. Next, your aim should be to benefit your audience. Third, use the necessary stylistic and vocal embellishments appropriate for the Quran. These embellishments, a good voice, a pleasant tone, and the good styles that reciters employ aren't a problem. Fortunately, we see among our reciters those whose recitations are broadcast on television or elsewhere, which I occasionally have the opportunity to see, that many of their recitations and melodic tones aren't copied from others. They are tones that they are creating. In the past, during the early days of revolution, our reciters had to imitate one of the famous Egyptian reciters such as Abdul Basit, Mustafa Ismail, Minshawi, or others like them. But today I see that this is no longer the case. Of course, there's nothing wrong with imitation. In other words, if someone imitates a voice, the tone of a skilled reciter, learns that tone and imitates it, there's nothing wrong with that. And it's perfectly fine.
You've done for me through all my years I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
What about you? IRIB English Radio.
This one lay. Bring us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Good evening. 46 years ago, one of the fastest and most comprehensive processes of power transfer in history was determined through the ballot box. The decisive development was a crystallization of the historic determination and desire of the Iranians to consolidate the foundations of independence, dignity, and national sovereignty. In a landmark referendum held in 1979, more than 98.2% of all eligible voters said yes to the establishing and an Islamic Republic in Iran. The vote held less than 2 months after the victory of the Islamic Revolution is considered as a turning point in the modern history of Iran. On this national day, we stand at a pivotal juncture to critically examine the achievements and challenges of the Islamic Republic of Iran. In a world fraught with adversity, this system has endured decades of turbulence, persisting through foreign-backed conspiracies, economic pressures, and constant threats of military action. Yet its survival raises essential questions about resilience, progress, and the price of independence. I am Bahman Ray, your host, and in this spotlight, we go over the history of the Islamic Republic and the ups and downs it has gone through. Let us begin with a short report.
The Islamic Republic of Iran. Three words that mark one of the most significant milestones in the country's history. Islamic Republic Day, celebrated on April the 1st, commemorates the referendum that established this new governing system, ushering in a new era, endorsed by 98.2% of the voters, as defined by its late founder Imam Khomeini. Islamic Republic, not a word more, not a word less. 46 years later, the sentiments remain just as strong.
The overwhelming presence of people at public celebrations, rallies, and events is a clear sign of the strong support for the Islamic Republic.
We voted for the Islamic Republic after the revolution because it was our slogan, independence, freedom, and Islamic Republic. This choice aligned perfectly with our ideals and aspirations.
Islamic Republic Day embodies one of the key slogans of the 1979 revolution chanted by masses, independence, freedom, and Islamic Republic. And today, a new generation remains committed to honoring this legacy, preserving the values that have shaped the nation's identity.
I was born after the revolution in the 1980s, and I believe that for us, it brought positive change. I will always stand by and support the Islamic Republic.
The Islamic Republic is the legacy handed down to us by our fathers. It is our duty to honor and protect this legacy so that it may be passed on to future generations.
The establishment of the Islamic Republic did not come easily. Many martyrs sacrificed their lives for us to have it, and it is our responsibility to safeguard it.
But Islamic Republic Day is more than just a national celebration. It highlights Iran's role as a beacon of hope for oppressed nations around the world.
The Islamic Republic is not merely a political system. It is a school of thought and a dialogue with the primary goal of creating justice. Its foundation lies in supporting oppressed people, above all the Palestinian people.
This is why the day serves as a reminder to Iranians of unity and solidarity that extends far beyond the nation's borders.
Iranians are marking the anniversary of the Islamic Republic with national pride, reaffirming their commitment to regional peace and progress towards a brighter future. Gisumish Ahmadi, Tehran.
This is
The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Welcome back. Allow me to introduce my guests. Saad Shah, author and commentator, joining us from Belfast, UK. And John Stepling, author and commentator, joining us from Inderøy, Norway. Gentlemen, very good to have you on the programme. I'm going to start with Saad with the first question. 46 years of the Islamic Revolution, and despite all the conspiracies, all the attacks, all the sanctions, it has survived. What do you think is the key to the survival of the Islamic Republic of Iran?
Hello to you and your guests and your audience. The Islamic Revolution of Iran, it wasn't just a regional event. It was a global, and it was a huge global earthquake at the time that resulted in enormous geopolitical shift in the region. It's still shaping and influencing West Asia today and all the Arabic and Islamic world as well. The impact that revolution have in Western imperialist forces, it weakened them since they lost the control of the Shah, who were deploying the huge country of Iran to the service of the imperialists, and to be looted by the Zionist entity and by the Western forces as well. So while this Islamic revolution was straight away when it broke, erupted in Iran, it's empowered the Islamic and the Arabic world. It's brought about what we call today the Islamic awakening, which is still that thing influencing and shaping the countries in the region and the movements worldwide. So, but it came, the Islamic Revolution as well, let me just allude to this. It came in a very important and a precise point in history, which we witnessed neutralizing of a major power in the region, like Egypt at the time, after signing the Camp David protocols between Sadat of Egypt and the Zionist entity fascist head at the time called Begin. That signature removed Egypt totally from the camp at the time you stand against Zionism and colonialism and placed it under the American domination. And that resulted immensely in strengthening the Zionist entity and provided with political recognition from the largest Arabic and Islamic state in the region. So it gave them free carte blanche on Palestine and to attack the resistance in Lebanon and in Syria. So the eruption of the Islamic Revolution, it changed that. It tilted the balance of power back to the people in the region. That is one of the major points which denied the Americans a free hand in the region and start forming what we have today, the Axis of Resistance.
Right. I'm going to talk to John right now. John, why do you think the Islamic Revolution's discourse has survived so many years, so many decades, and can still stand up to the dialogue offered by the West?
I think its durability is rather remarkable, actually. Certainly, the United States and Israel, which is an organ of the United States, essentially, has never made any bones about wanting to bring the downfall of the Republic. And you have to remember that the Shah of Iran was a U.S. puppet. He was installed by the U.S. and the CIA, and the British helped. He had the most notorious secret police probably in the whole of the 20th century, trained by the United States. The U.S. gave him what intelligence it had, and they were very happy because he did what he was told. There was a lot of sort of theatrical visits to differing countries, but Pahlavi simply listened to what the U.S. said. He knew what he was supposed to say. He knew what his policies were supposed to be. And this was a typical CIA playbook kind of a coup that they orchestrated, getting Mossadegh out, putting in the Shah. They've done very similar things, what, a dozen other places. What is interesting is that when the revolution came, the United States had no intelligence about it at all. They did not expect anything. They did not see it coming. And this has been one of the reasons, I think, that the political class in the U.S. harbor such animosity towards Iran, is they were made to look very foolish. And it was just a massive failure, an intelligence failure. So there's that history looming over everything. And of course, the other reason is that every other country in the region has been subjected to some kind of U.S. incursion, some kind of conflict. And certainly Iran has participated in conflicts too, not particularly willingly, but every country that surrounds Iran has had problems. The U.S. has military bases surrounding the country. Iran is surrounded by U.S. military, and yet they have survived. And not only that, they have a reputation for an extraordinarily adept diplomatic corps, an extremely smart and savvy sort of deep state. It's renowned for this. So they have the respect of all their neighbors. And I think that the few times that Iran has tried to reach out to the U.S., the JCPOA and things like that have ended badly because the U.S. doesn't keep its word, and I hope that the current administration in Iran has learned that lesson. And the other point is, since the revolution, Israel has wanted nothing more than a war with Iran. That's been clear.
Right, Saeb, John mentioned something very important, the military bases of the United States around the country, and at the same time, the failure of the last time the two countries started to have some sort of dialogue. We've had throughout the history of the Islamic Republic, we've had all sorts of conspiracies against the Iran. We've had, like, even Saddam Hussein invaded the country and with the support, full support and backing of the Western bloc. They even gave him chemical warfare against the country. And all of these terrors and assassinations by the Israeli regime in Iran, nuclear scientists were assassinated. Why all sorts of obstruction, why all sorts of aggression against the country that came with the slogan of peace?
As I said, the Islamic Revolution of Iran, it wasn't just regional. Some people misunderstand it. Some people think it's just a regional country who have a massive revolution. This is have three side effects for it. There's a global, and there is regional, and there is local to Iran. The global became of this influence of the Islamic Revolution. It's in power shifting and power distribution. After the collapse of the Soviet Union, it was felt very well. The United States of America have a free ride to control and loot the resources of the whole world and enslaved many countries and fought any countries even who were close to the Soviet Union. At the time, we noticed even the Russians themselves, the Chinese, become dominated by the unipolar power, the United States of America. West Europe, today, they just discovered they were totally being occupied and controlled by the United States. United States of America after the Americans throw them under the bus when they were negotiating with the Russians about the Ukraine. So this is one of the global and start in regional building its own resistance camp facing the United States of America. You mentioned the massive war which they supported Saddam Hussein in launching on Iraq. So they didn't want to leave Iran 1 minute to breathe and to develop itself. They kept the wars on it. They kept the sabotage operations against the scientists. They wanted to disrupt all the development and the sciences advancement in Iran. The whole forces in the world, when they see in Iran, is advancing and facing that monsters of imperialism, they started themselves to have what we have today is regional powers, and it's developed to some alliance which today we have the BRICS. This is during the hegemons of the United States of America on world affairs, this wasn't even a dreamt with, but the resistance which is Iran showed them an example, encouraged a lot of countries to start and to break away and to form their own multipolar system in the world, which we see today with the BRICS, we see with the Chinese, we see with the Russians, we see with South Africa, with Iran. And the right. Islamic revolution in the local level brought to the people of Iran dignity, as you mentioned in your report, sovereignty, independence, and freedom from the criminal white supremacist colonial domination that looted the country during the Shah.
Exactly. You mentioned the key point of independence. If it was one of the key principles of Ayatollah Khomeini's vision for the future of the Islamic Republic. My question for you, John, is how do you think this independence played such a key part in the formation of the state and in redefining the relations the country had with the world?
Well, the United States expects other countries to be obedient, to listen to what the message from Washington is, and to follow the lead of Western diplomats when they visit. This is just expected. And those times when countries show resolve and independence, the United States is shocked. They're angry. They're appalled. They feel they have to discipline this delinquent child in their eyes. And Iran has simply never allowed itself to be pushed around at all. And again, this speaks to the respect that it has from its neighbors. It may not even be liked by many of them, but everybody respects Iran. And they have earned that respect. The U.S. is flailing at the moment. The Trump administration doesn't quite know what to do. He's threatening everybody. If it's not tariffs, it's bombs. And he's got some super hawks in his administration right now who, before the election, Pete Hegseth and Rubio and all these people had said they absolutely want to bomb Iran. The first thing I'm going to do is bomb Iran. Then, of course, when they are, talk with the Pentagon, they talk with the Joint Chiefs, they talk with advisors, and they realize, oh, well, this would be a very bad idea. This is not a simple, tiny little country that we can push around. And in fact, I think given how thinly stretched the U.S. is, they simply can't. They can't engage in another confrontation with anybody. But this returns me to Israel again. Israel, the Greater Israel Project, the expansion, we see it with Syria and Lebanon right now. Netanyahu in particular has always wanted a war with Iran. He has pushed for it relentlessly for 30 years, and he hasn't gotten it. And the reason he hasn't gotten it is that there are a few sane heads in Washington and at the Pentagon who know very well it's simply an impossible thing to do. The U.S. can't even stop the Houthis from shutting down the Red Sea. So I think that Iran Iran has demonstrated a kind of integrity and independence in the face of a lot of provocation, assassinations of key figures and so forth, and they have remained extremely level-headed and with great resolve, and that's all you can expect, I suppose.
Right, as John mentioned the issue of Israel, I want to talk to you, Saib, about one of the biggest accomplishments of Ayatollah Khomeini in shaping the foreign policy of Iran in the beginning of the new government and in the new structure in Iran. And that was the issue of Palestine. He put the issue of Palestine on top of Iran's foreign policy agenda. How do you think, many experts and analysts are saying that this helped bring the issue of Palestine from being a rather limited regional Arab problem and issue to something global, and the world was kind of awakened to it. What's your take on that?
It's a good question. The first thing when you notice after the Islamic revolution of Iran, it's felt in the streets of Palestine, a copycat of the Islamic revolution in forms of the resistance. From appearing, first of all, the Islamic wings of the Palestinian Revolution, from Islamic Jihad, then later on to Hamas, was formed. The guidance of that was the Islamic Revolution of Iran. Then the habits of the Palestinian people start to adjust itself socially, culturally, with the Islamic Revolution of Iran. This is important. And the resilience developed in there. Since I mentioned after neutralizing Egypt, Israel got a carte blanche, attacking Lebanon, occupied it in 1982, destroying the Palestinian presence in Lebanon, attacking the Lebanese resistance, American landing in Lebanon as victorious with the French forces. Even the resistance would start developing in 1983, attack them and push them back. In the year 2000, the resistance, which were supported by the Islamic Revolution of Iran, managed with the leadership of Hezbollah at the time to cleanse Lebanon from this occupation. And this is at the global level, as I said. You have countries like Venezuela, when it was besieged and blockaded by the United States of America, its neighbor. The Iranian Revolution sent ships of some oil and gas, liquid gas, and the food and supplies, medical supplies, and technologies to support the people who has been oppressed by the Americans. This is felt, there is a network of resistance was forming from the transatlantic to the Indian Ocean, Pacific Ocean. And that's Iran give an example to a lot of countries to stand in its position facing the Americans. Unipolar kind of act in the world and domination in the world. And the Islamic Revolution set that example, and lots of countries start to follow suit. Lately, I want to emphasize this, the EU itself, following the Iranian example, when they want to try to build their own military force now, they try to build their own economies, they try to show themselves as independent from the American
government. Right, Saib, allow me to jump in there for the sake of time. Because you mentioned the achievements, the scientific achievements of the country, I wanted to actually ask you about that. It's a question for both of you. First, Saib, please go on, because you were already talking about it. Despite all the sanctions and the cruel, illegal sanctions that Iran is on, that basically the entire life of the Islamic Republic, it has been under sanctions. But we are seeing so much progress in science, in the nuclear industry. We can see how Iran has progressed despite all the assassinations, all the plots to delay the progress and everything. What does that tell the world? What kind of message does it send across?
The message is very clear. The leadership of the Islamic Revolution was able from the beginning to guide the Iranian people toward building capable, independent state, politically and economically. And then they start achieving their scientific development. This development is indigenous in Iran, become localized from industry. This progress in various fields, you're talking about even apart from the sanctions and the wars and the aggression and the sabotage and all of these destabilizing operation, covert or overt operation, the revolution, Islamic revolution, opened the way to the country to develop itself and build solid scientific and industrial base that was advanced. You know, in nanotechnology, Iran is one of the leading countries of that base and have with its research centers. Iran today, while it's facing the imperialist powers who is wanting to do a regime change just to keep looting the country after that, is a strong, capable, independent country who can stand firm against imperialism and against the terrorist and assassination operation. Because the United States of America and Israel sending squads of death, you know, death squads to assassinate scientists in different fields.
Right,
this is how they try to destabilize the country.
Thank you, sir. And John, one final question. Of course, I wanted you to also talk about the same question, but Iran has maintained its influence in regional politics and diplomacy despite all the efforts by the adversaries. 1 minute we have. Please, your take on that.
Well, again, they have extraordinary integrity. They've kept their word with partners. Their diplomatic corps is renowned for its intelligence and again, its integrity. Yes, under sanctions, they have managed to prosper and achieve enormous things, but this is much like Cuba, like Venezuela. Cuba has been under sanctions since their revolution, and yet they produce more doctors than anywhere in the world. Iran is the same kind of story.
Right.
They have not squandered their role in the region. They have supported Hamas. They have supported the right side of everything. They are friends with the right people. It's just very sound and intelligent leadership, I think. And it's not the kind of cuckoos that we see, sadly, in power in the EU and US right now, let alone, of course, Israel.
Thank you so much, gentlemen, for the conversation. It was a great honor to have you on the program. Saeb Shaath, author and commentator, joining us from Belfast, UK, and John Stepling, author and commentator, joining us from Inderøy, Norway. And thank you so much for staying with us on Spotlight.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. We'll be right back.